Because mine don't do this, I can hear everything.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order, please. We're going to start out with opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 664A.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure comes to you from Senator Olson. It's a measure that prohibits state agencies from imposing civil penalties on small businesses for a first violation of paperwork requirements, as long as the violation does not pose unreasonable risk of harm to either the employees of the business or to the general public, and if the business is otherwise in compliance with all other applicable laws. It specifies that the prohibition does not apply when contrary requirement is imposed by federal law or by mandatory federal guidance. No amendment, and this is the first time the committee is hearing the bill.
Okay. And Senator Olson's...
He was notified, and we're not expecting him.
Okay. Anthony Smith. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony K. Smith. I'm the Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. As you'll recall, NFIB represents nearly 7,000 small businesses here in Oregon, many being the smallest of small businesses. And although 90% of our members have fewer than 25 employees and 70% have fewer than 10 employees, the small businesses we represent account for over 60,000 Oregon jobs. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 664A, which, as we just heard, would prohibit an agency from imposing a civil penalty on a small business for a first-time violation of a paperwork requirement under limited circumstances. This bill first popped up on my radar close to the beginning of the session, and we were really encouraged when it started to see some movement over on the Senate side. And after a first public hearing back in March, a group of stakeholders, including agency personnel and business groups, came together, sat down, crafted some amendment language, the product of which is before you today in the form of the A engrossed bill, which, by the way, passed the Senate on a unanimous 29-0 vote. It simply states that so long as a civil penalty is not required to be imposed under federal law, and the small business was in substantial compliance with all other applicable laws, and so long as the failure or the error was a first violation by the small business of the requirement, and the failure or error did not pose an unreasonable risk of harm to an employee of the small business or a member of the general public, an agency would not be able to impose a civil penalty on the small business for any of the following reasons, which are very nicely laid out here as the most common examples from our work group discussion of the kind of civil penalties that we were trying to address specifically in the bill. So a failure to timely file a form or other document required by the agency, a failure to personally carry a document required by the agency, a failure to carry a document required by the agency in a person's vehicle, or an error in the completion of a form or document required by the agency. We think Senate Bill 664 sends the right kind of message to Oregon small businesses. It seeks to foster better relationships between regulators and those they regulate by acknowledging that compliance with the law is more important than penalizing a small business for minor paperwork errors. And especially for new entrepreneurs, getting up to speed on all the applicable rules and regulations can be challenging. We want them to educate themselves, to be compliant with the law, and ultimately we want them to succeed based on their ability to provide a needed product or service to their community. So on behalf of the thousands of small businesses here in Oregon, we ask for your support for Senate Bill 664A. Thank you. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Fahey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did the work group talk about specific types of examples of the kinds of paperwork violation that, you know, you all were thinking of when you talked about this bill? What were there examples of constituents, of lawmakers? Just give us a sense of exactly what kinds of things we're talking about.
Sure,
here.
Chair Holvey, Representative Fahey, that did come up, and we tried to lay that out as clear as possible in the bill with the bullets of the bill. I believe those are, Section 2,
Right. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm talking specific real-world examples of exactly what kinds of things.
Well, anecdotally, we hear a lot of situations where somebody might be out on a job, they have their permit in their vehicle, but it's not the right permit, or it's a permit that has expired, but they have a permit that is is valid, but they have the wrong one. Maybe the best example I could think of that might be not applicable to this exact scenario, but that all of us could probably understand is, you know, we get a new insurance card mailed to us in the mail. We have it in our glove box, or we think we do. We get pulled over, and lo and behold, when the officer checks to see if you have the current proof of insurance, you find that you have your card from 6 months ago in your glove box. So that's kind of the spirit of what we're trying to get at in this bill here. Another thing to consider, and that we did talk about in the stakeholder group, was the issue of substantial compliance. So it's not that you can't that you would be given a pass for not having a license or not having a permit. You need to have those things. But if there was something about a minor error in the application process, as long as you made the correction, then the civil penalty wouldn't apply. Or if a late payment was made, but the payment was made, but it was made late and it was your first time, then the civil penalty wouldn't apply. Or like I said, if you have the license or the permit, but you don't have it on hand, then the civil penalty would not apply.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you all have a chance to think about, you know, the types of violations that might be covered under the scenarios in the law that we might not want to give people a free pass for? I mean, I do a lot of, I'm on the Marijuana Regulation Committee, and so there's a lot of different marijuana-related paperwork that, you know, the tracking system of if I sell 10 pounds of marijuana into the system, would I get a free pass if I reported that 30 days late? You know, those kinds of things. I want to get a sense of if the work group really had the time to think through.
Chair Holvey, Representative Fahey, I think we did have a lot of conversations about that, not just in the time that we spent in the work group, but following up through emails afterwards. I think you'll hear from some agency folks who I believe are going to be following me with some testimony to provide maybe some technical answers to some of those questions. But there is a very long list of civil penalties that are not included in Chapter 183, which these are this particular bill would only limit civil penalties under Chapter 183.
Okay.
So before I go on to another question, I'm not sure if I heard you correctly, but as a small business owner, if I get pulled over and don't have my registration or driver's license on hand, that I'm not going to get a civil penalty?
That was an example to show the spirit of what we were trying to get after.
No, that was a serious question, though.
Oh, no.
Would it apply to...
I don't believe it would. No. No. But we were trying to...
Is it excluded? Department ODOT?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if that provision is under there. I was just speaking off the cuff, and my apologies.
Okay. Interesting. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, two-part question. is the intent of the legislation to really promote taking the edge off of the more less, I guess I should say, the less serious violations to help kind of create more of a partnership, I would say, between the state of Oregon as it serves Oregonians and business owners and whatnot? I mean, is that...
Chair Holvey, Representative Hurd, exactly. That's really what we're trying to get after, is to promote cooperation among businesses and the regulators and the businesses that they regulate, and to not have such a rigid relationship between the folks who, you know, are trying to do their job on one side, representing the agency that they work for, and the folks who are trying to serve their community by offering their services, you know, in their communities.
Brief follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you also think that it may promote possibly self-reporting if that edge is released and people feel like, hey, you know, it's a partnership between myself, the business, an Oregonian, and the state of Oregon, if they don't feel like, oh, my gosh, if they find out that, you know, I did this little thing wrong, I'm going to get a $500 fine, so I'm just going to try to sweep that one under the rug. I mean, could it potentially help assist in actually better self-reporting between the state and their partner?
Chair Holvey, Representative Hurd, I think you're onto something there, and I know that when I'm talking to small business owners, there are resources out there within government that for you to engage with when you think you might have a compliance issue and you want to find out if you actually have that compliance issue. But there is always some fear in the back of the mind of the small business person of, well, what's the consequences for outing myself as a potential violator of some requirement? So the spirit of what we're trying to do with Senate Bill 664A is really to open those lines of communication, not have such a problem between someone who might think that you know, they want to be on the defensive all the time.
Mr. Chair, it brings one more thought to mind.
Follow up.
Thank you. I guess that kind of kicks something off in my head. So in your opinion, could continuing down a path of this rigid adversarial relationship that these individuals think they may have with the state of Oregon, if we continued down that path, doesn't that potentially compound the issues of not reporting an issue? And so I guess what I'm saying is if you're initially accidentally causing yourself to commit a violation or through ignorance, and then you discover it later, and then because you feel like, my gosh, just the first time I'm going to get slapped hard, they may not call into Bully or whoever and say, hey, am I doing this wrong or right? And so it compounds potentially the issue that started out innocently, but now because of fear of their state, they just keep doing it wrong, or just because they continue to be ignorant of what the real policy is because of that fear of reaching out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hurd, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think this is a huge step in the right direction to make it very clear to especially our small businesses for something simple as a minor paperwork violation that the state of Oregon is not there to try to catch you in something. They're there to help you along in the process of compliance.
Sounds wise.
Representative Kinnamer.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. When I was talking with Senator Olson's staff when I signed on as a sponsor, not chief sponsor of this bill, the idea was in lots of things there's a learning curve, and this is kind of gives you a pass on the first time, and hopefully thereafter you shall do much better.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And I noticed this bill applies to small businesses, which is a company of less than 50. So companies with more than 50 don't get that learning curve. So that's sort of the...
They've got attorneys and all kinds of other...
The lines that are drawn. All right. I appreciate your testimony. I'm going to think of some more questions, but I'll let you off the hook now. And I guess we have somebody else left to testify on the amendment that excludes the home builders out of this bill. John Chandler.
You may be wrong.
Mr. Chair, are we having testimony from agency folks?
The agencies are in the room if you'd like to hear from them.
It'd be nice to just get those.
Okay, well, let's talk about this supposed amendment from the home builders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler.
Or is that a rumor?
Or Oregon Home Builder Association, it is a rumor, Mr. Chair, unsubstantiated. Here in support of Senate Bill 664 as in the Ian Gross version, and to answer some of the questions that were posed, the best example that I came up with in my industry was lead paint certifications. My association is the largest provider of lead paint education, both for the initial certification and the renewals. It's a very important topic. We take it very seriously. And as a result, people are supposed to carry their card. We prepare a little card with their picture on it and their license number and all that. That's the sort of paperwork violation we're talking about, where somebody has gone through the steps, they've taken the classes, they've done everything they're supposed to do, and they just make a mistake and leave it on the dresser. That's the sort of paperwork violation we're really aiming at. There's no harm to the public. The person has gone through the right steps. They just made a mistake. And I'll tell you, in a broader sense, most of the small businesses don't have lawyers on retainer. They don't have HR people, or if they do have HR people, they're wedded to them, and that's one of many jobs they might have. This is, and the adversarial relationship is unfortunate, and it's inevitable in some cases where you have a rule and an enforcement of that rule. And we've worked with agencies that are not covered by this bill, with DEQ, with building codes, with others, where too often the education of the business person occurs through the enforcement process. That's probably the wrong way to do it. And in most cases, it works out okay. This just makes it very clear in these kind of issues subject to ORS 183 that now there is that one-time pass. here's the way we want you to do it, here's what's supposed to happen, here's the paperwork you're supposed to have, please do that in the future. The way the amendment's drafted, it is a one per customer, so to speak. You don't get, if you're a frequent flyer and a violator and a scofflaw, you do not get the benefit of this. Most Oregon small businesses, at least the ones that I represent, FIB, and FIB represents, and other trade groups in this building, they're trying to do it right. And for the most part, and I'll say on the record, we have no patience with anybody in our industry who does not do it right. It is in our interest to make sure that the rules are followed by everybody, that there's a level playing field. But we also understand that a lot of them simply are, through inadvertence, exposed to legal penalty. This is a good step. So we commend it to you. And, oh, Mr. Chair, to your question about driver's licenses, I don't believe those are covered by 183. But that would be an amendment that might be worthwhile.
Just so we're covered.
Just saying. We're glad to take any questions.
Thank you for that update. Appreciate that. What chapters are the driver's license under anyway? All right, any questions? Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. Just to confirm, Mr. Chandler, if this bill passes with this amendment, your industry might say good things about government?
Mr. Chair, Representative Evans, let's not get carried away. But, no, honestly, we have
had to ask.
How about this committee?
Absolutely. With most agencies, I think most of the regulated community does have good relationships or tries to have good relationships.
You're on tape now.
Quite so.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example that is not covered by this bill. A bunch of years ago, one of my members was building a subdivision, had a 100-year event, storm event, blew through the stormwater protections, caused a lot of damage. Representative Kennemer remembers this, was in his district. And it was a sizable fine imposed. As a result of that sizable fine and the issue on the table, we were able to work out with DEQ. My guy wrote the check, but he wrote it in the form of to pay for a seminar to teach other contractors how to do stormwater management in a way. We had the agency involved, Governor Kitzhaber at the time, kicked off the seminar. As wherever we can, we try to find opportunities to partner up with government because we understand regulations have to be there. But if they're there and the people aren't aware they're there and aren't or get penalized by simply, like I say, leaving something on the dresser, then that causes that conflict more than the fact of the regulation in the first place. So these kinds of bills and efforts that we work on with agencies, I think, are very important to make sure that it is a partnership. And frankly, also to make sure that when the people are actually behaving badly, you can penalize them and get them out of the business. And this committee is crackerjack, sure.
Any other questions?
No. Statements.
We don't dare.
We don't dare.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I do note that there are a few agencies in the room, and it's been requested that, DAS, and how about DCBS?
Come on down.
And I see Bowley back there. What else? What other agencies?
Going once, going twice.
We only have three. We only have three chairs.
I know. Dodged it.
Representative Fahey, you
Thank
had
you,
a
Mr.
question
Chair.
For an agency.
I have a couple of questions probably, but so the bill says that it doesn't apply if the failure or error did not pose unreasonable risk of harm to an employee or member of the general public. Do you all interpret that to mean physical harm, financial harm? How broadly is harm defined? And then sort of how much discretion, it sounds like from the definition of harm to this, only if it's a minor violation piece, how much discretion would you all have, and are you comfortable with that discretion?
Sure, I'll take that question. So for the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services, Chair Holvey, Representative Fahey. I think that the unreasonable risk of harm would be within the discretion of the regulatory officer, the compliance officer who really was assigned to that case or that regulated entity. It would be a significant degree of discretion. However, I will note that that's not really distinct from what it is right now. The one conversation that we had in the work group session or the work group setting was really that This really seeks to formalize or maybe codify what is already existing practice. One thing that I was really trying to emphasize was that by and large agencies, and I think Mr. Chandler spoke to this quite eloquently earlier, is that agencies really, regulated agencies really do have good relationships with the regulated entities. And generally speaking, if there was a first-time violation that a small business made for really what was a true paperwork violation, so their report is due and it was submitted a few days late, or a form was filed but one checkbox was not marked correctly, something that is really truly a paperwork violation, in most cases agencies would not at that time assess an administrative penalty or assess a civil penalty anyway. So this really was attempting to align statute with what existing practice is, making sure that there are some exemptions for public health and safety and for an unreasonable risk of harm, and ensuring that by and large, that entity is still in compliance with their regulated program. So that was a really long-winded way to say, I think that an officer would have a significant degree of discretion, but it's not something different than what they would have right now.
Good follow-up. So just to get back to this point of sort of financial harm versus physical health and safety you mentioned, I mean, one of the examples, I do a lot of, you know, work in the manufactured housing communities area, and so one example of paperwork that owners have to do there is if they're selling the park, they have to notify the state agency and park residents. So you only sell your park once. It is a paperwork issue. What happened, you know, is that something that we would want to give people a free pass on, where if we gave them a free pass about against notification, then the residents don't have the opportunity to come together and purchase the park? That's financial harm. It's not physical. Or so what? Tell
Sure.
me what would happen.
Chair Holby, Representative Fahey. So that specific issue and specific example did not come up. However, in subsequent conversations, both with counsel and with our friends over at DOJ, financial harm was definitely included in this larger unreasonable risk of harm term. And so I think in that instance, specifically about the notice of intent to sell, I think that, one, that would not be within substantial compliance, because that is the point of that requirement, that there be notice. So that's the first part. And then, two, because failure to provide that notice to the agency would indeed result in an unreasonable risk of financial harm, I think in both of those circumstances, this new scheme would really not apply.
Yeah. Chair Holby, Representative Fahey, Therese Van Winkle, Department of Consumer and Business Services. I should also point out, too, that within the bill, it does allow an agency that if there is federal regulation that preempts something of this nature, they could still pursue and do a civil penalty of financial harm of the nature. And so some of the entities we regulate, there are national standards that a licensee has to follow. So this would not, you know, we would not be, yep. So for this, we would be able to issue a penalty if it's a termination that there is financial harm to consumer.
Okay. One more.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Mr. Chandler talked a little bit about this, that maybe there'll be an amendment about it, but I was a little unclear about, do people get one free pass generally? Do they get one free pass for every type of violation? Do they get one free pass per agency? How many free passes do people get under this and for different types of things? Because the bill seems a little vague to me. But
sure. Representative, excuse me, Chair Holby, Representative Fahey. So that was something that, again, came up in the work group. And I think the struggle that we ultimately realized when crafting this amendment language was that there are lots of different programs that agencies have lots of different civil penalties for, and lots of different small paperwork form filing requirements. And so the degree to which we could really hone in and narrow the scope to only these types of things, in absence of listing out every single one of those programs in statute, was difficult to get to. So to that end, I think that, what was the question? Sorry.
It was about the number of free passes that people get.
Yeah,
do you
sorry,
get one
yes.
per type of violation, one per agency?
So
one
the
per
way
customer.
That my understanding, and I'd maybe let other work group participants speak to this as well, is that it would be essentially one per small business per agency. The degree to which we have agencies across the executive branch have the ability to talk to everyone else and sort of run different lists of regulated persons against every other agency and every other program's list is very difficult. And so the idea that we are attempting to assist small business, get them sort of up to that learning curve and help them navigate the program that they're in would really be an agency-specific process.
Mm. I'm done.
Oh, Representative Hurd, go ahead.
Sorry. One of the reps is telling me no, so.
I had afraid what the question's going to be.
Maybe it's a statement, because the chair loves those for me.
So let's try to stay on task here.
Okay,
if you
sorry.
Have a question, Representative
Yeah, I do. Okay, so you three ladies represent three individual agencies, essentially. So, I mean, your hope, it sounds like, is that this will cultivate a better relationship between the state and Oregonians as we try to educate individuals on how to best follow the law. Because the statement, you know, the old adage, ignorance of the law is no excuse, I kind of laugh every time I hear that one, because I'm like, that just seems so over-the-top ridiculous to believe anybody could actually know all the laws the state puts out and has in the files. It was a question that evolved into a statement.
As the Chair Holby, Representative Hurd, actually, when this bill was in the Senate, I asked my divisions, because I have some divisions that are explicitly exempt from this bill, and I have some divisions that would be under this bill. And so I asked kind of what our general policy is for violations of this nature, and everybody, the consistent answer is no. If it's merely a paperwork violation, no. And if it's a new business, we would talk to them and work things out. I mean, even further, one of my divisions, under the workers' compensation system, we have an ombudsman who actually works under the director. They're separate from the division that focuses exclusively on small business, and one of his main duties is working on adjudication and resolution of various things so that small business owners can have an independent voice to resolve issues.
Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it possible for a business owner to know every rule that they fall under and get it right 100% of the time?
Chair Holby, Representative Bynum, theoretically, yes, I think that it is possible. The degree to which that is likely, I have no idea. I know that, generally speaking, there are lots of new programs created by the legislature and modifications of existing programs and new rules that come out on a really regular basis. And so I expect that it would be part of a business's matter of course that they would try to apprise themselves of all of the new regulations coming out, but I expect that would also be difficult. Yes.
Would you please share some insight based on your experience with businesses and how likely it is for businesses to know every rule that they must follow in with respect to every regulation that is placed on them?
Chair Holby, Vice Chair Bynum, that is exactly why the Bureau of Labor and Industries has the technical assistance for employers, so that employers can call the agency, walk through a possible situation, and we can get it to the point where they can be in compliance without ever meeting with any of our enforcement staff. And that part of the division of the agency is completely separate from any of our enforcement actions.
And for the record, I'm not sure I asked anybody to identify themselves, but I don't think you did anyway.
I did not. Sorry. For the record, Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries.
So I have a question for DCPS. Not knowing which of your agencies fall under this and which of them don't, does the insurance industry fall under this?
Chair Holva, yes, it does fall under this bill.
And the banking industry, I assume, does too.
Yeah, so Chair Holby, so the two divisions that under DCBS that are exempt are Oregon OSHA and the Workers' Compensation Division, as they have their own adjudication processes, and they're explicitly exempt under 183.745.
And so did your, when I'm thinking about, you know, the lending industry and all the, I mean, their job is paperwork, and probably a majority of them could be small businesses. You know, and those are pretty critical forms that have to be done on time, filled out. I worry about that a little bit, though. When I read through the bill, it's, you know, it does talk about harm, so we're really specific that financial harm is included in this.
Yes. Chair Holby, I apologize. I didn't have an opportunity to talk to the Division of Financial Regulations Enforcement Officer to get some background on this, and I didn't have thorough feedback. To be upfront for feedback from the division on this. But again, a lot of the programs under Division of Financial Regulation they have to be in tune with federal regulation and also other things as well. So for example, going back to your scenario, they have to do a loan originator, they have to do background checks. And so if they have certain violations, such as a felony, they would be they couldn't practice do that. And so, you know, going back to the question of what is a substantial, what's a piece of a small oversight versus a outright lie. Again, it falls back to the determination of our enforcement staff.
The only reason I bring this up is I know that we have a we have a lot of industries like debt collectors and debt management companies and all of these different kinds of companies that have pretty substantial and very important paperwork and forms that and notices and things like that that need to be filed, and that could have some pretty major consequences if done incorrectly. Just trying to make sure that this bill doesn't undermine that process.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chair Hovey, going back to Lindsay's statement, again, it falls under the discretion of the department to make that determination. And again, if there is an issue, if there is a penalty that's issued, there is that adjudication process for appeal of the civil penalty. So there is that in place as well.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming up in an unanticipated way. No one else signed up to testify. Anybody else want to testify? So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 664A. And
that's why this bill is kind of.
Let's start with.
Fix it.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 398A.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure that comes to you from Senator Steiner Hayward. You heard it back on May 1st. It requires the Labor Commissioner to adopt rules that require employers to provide annual written notice to employees about the earned income tax credit. After the hearing, we had an amendment drafted. We worked with Betsy Earls. It requires that the language of the notice to the employee be in the language that the employer typically uses to communicate with the employee. And it would also require Boley to collaborate in the rulemaking process with business representatives. On the dash A6 amendment, there's minimal expenditure impact, minimal revenue impact. And I want to put on the record, after the public hearing, I talked with the Employment Department. There were some questions during the public hearing about that. We wanted to be clear that the Employment Department would not be mailing out information about the earned income tax credit to the unemployment insurance benefit recipients. Instead, they would receive information as they entered the WorkSource centers. Maybe it would be on a digital reader board in the WorkSource centers. And it was clear that the benefits, unemployment benefits, are not counted as earned income for purposes of receiving the earned income tax credit.
Thank you. And that's not a law that we're creating. That's existing law.
That's right, correct.
Now. So let's have a motion on the A6 amendment. Anybody willing to make that motion?
Yes.
I probably stole it from you.
Yes, Renee.
Chair Hovey, I move to adopt the A6 amendment to Senate Bill 398A.
Representative Barreto moves to adopt the dash A6 amendment to Senate Bill 398. Discussion. Representative Barreto.
Yeah, I was wondering if Mrs. Earls would come up and kind of tell us just a little bit about it.
Sure. Betsy, if you'd like to come up. Or Ms. Earls, excuse me.
I think at this point in the session, either one is fine. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We very much appreciate the committee and the chair's indulgence in waiting on this bill and putting together this set of amendments.
If you recall, when I testified last time on this bill, we thought that it was important that the business community be involved in rulemaking because the advocates for the bill were involved. And as the employers that would need to be implementing the bill to some extent, we felt like it would be a good idea for us to be on the rulemaking work group. So we appreciate including that in the dash six. We also asked to have some language changed having to do with the wording around what language the employer must communicate the information required to the employee. We wanted that changed from a requirement that it be communicated to the employee in the employee's primary language, which is not something an employer would necessarily know, to language saying the employer the information can be communicated in the language that the employer typically uses to communicate with the employee, which we feel like is a much easier standard for us to reach. And we do know that BOLI has a template for this kind of information to be communicated, and that probably will be in more languages than one. Nevertheless, for employer purposes and those requirements on employers, it makes more sense to have it be just what they communicate with their employees in typically. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Heck.
Thank you, Chair. So AOI is happy with the A6s and the way it is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are, AOI and OBA are very happy with the amendment, the fixes, and the bill. So thank you.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. I don't know that the Employment Department needed to add anything. No. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if the employer forgets to send this out with the W-2, then does the Senate Bill 664 that we just heard give them an escape?
For the first time, I don't know how many employees that would align to. If you have two employees, it only applies to the first one, probably.
I don't know.
It might be exempt under the exemption.
Yeah, I don't think this is a 183, but
exempt under the exemption. Where does that land us?
I don't know the answer to that question. But
are we going to go ahead and move the bill?
Yes.
The amendment.
Do we vote on the amendment? Is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Now the amendment's adopted.
Chair Hovey, I move Senate Bill 398 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 398 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Did we adopt the amendment?
We did.
Okay. You were talking.
Is there discussion?
I'm good with the bill.
Do you want an answer to that question?
No, I'm fine. No, I have, actually, that was just being, it was kind of a little humor.
Rhetorical. Yeah. So was my answer.
Sorry it wasn't read. Yeah.
So, sort of going a little bit slow for the moment. Yeah, can you check?
Can you check and see. Trying to get camera in here.
So, Kayla, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Adams?
Yes.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Representative
Hatch? Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 398, having received the votes, has passed. If anybody doesn't have an objection, I'll assign Representative McKinney Geyer to carry this bill. I guess she's a chief sponsor on it, so we'll have Representative McKinney Geyer carry the bill. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 398. Open a work session. Let's move to Senate Bill 298.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is the bill that came to you from the Interim Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. You heard it May 8th. It extends a sunset to 2021 on provisions that grant the Boley Commissioner discretion in seeking civil penalties to appear in court on housing discrimination claims. Declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no amendment. Minimal expenditure impact, no revenue impact. Vote on this was 29-0 in the Senate.
Thank you.
No amendment.
Can I have a motion on the bill?
Yeah, Chair Hovey, I move Senate Bill 298A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 298A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative
Fahey?
Aye.
Representative
Pack? Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Yes.
He's looking.
Representative Penimer?
Excused.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 298A, having received the votes, has passed. Close the works, or let's assign a carrier. Is anybody up to carrying this bill on the floor?
I think Kennemer volunteers.
Oh.
Thank you, Representative Kennemer.
Don't you have
with that, we'll close down the work session on Senate Bill 298.
Can you do that after his excuse? Oh.
Take a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Kennemer to vote.
I move we suspend the rules to allow Representative Kennemer to vote.
On Senate Bill 298A.
Yes.
Aye. Is there any objection to suspending the rules? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. And you're assigned to carrying that bill.
And I guess I should be penalized. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
I mean honored. Excuse me.
Sorry to know.
Which bill would you like to do next, Jan?
Well done.
Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 41A.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a measure from the Employment Department. You heard it May 3rd. It updates the statutes governing the department's workforce and labor data analysis responsibilities. It clarifies that the department may share certain confidential information with government entities that include public universities and OHSU and PERS. It also clarifies that home care workers are not state employees for the purpose of workforce and labor market information. And it repeals an obsolete program called the Occupational Program Planning System. There is the A2 amendment that resolves conflicts with House Bill 2312. There's no revenue impact and there's no expenditure impact. And the measure passed the Senate on a vote of 25-5.
Thank you. So we have an A2 amendment to adopt.
Chair Holby, I move to adopt the A2 amendment to Senate Bill 41A.
Representative Barreto moves to adopt the A2 amendment to Senate Bill 41. Is there a discussion? Is there objection to adopting the A2 amendment? Seeing none, A2 is adopted. And a motion to the floor.
Chair Holby, I move Senate Bill 41 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 41A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Representative Pack?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Penimer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 41A has passed. Volunteer for a carrier on this bill?
No carrier.
Representative Doherty, thank you.
You always got extra credit.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 41A and open a work session on Senate Bill 85.
Mr. Chair, this is a measure from the PUC. You heard it back on April 26th. It modifies membership of the Telecommunication Devices Access Program Advisory Committee. The Dash 1 amendment is prepared. It requires one position on that committee to be filled by a person who is visually impaired or deafblind. No expenditure or revenue impacts on the measure, and it passed Senate on a vote of 28-0.
So could I have a motion on the Dash 1?
Chair Holvey, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 85.
Representative Barreto moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 85. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Dash 1 amendments adopted to Senate Bill 85, excuse me.
Chair Holvey, I move Senate Bill 85 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves to Senate Bill 85 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Hurst?
Aye.
Representative Kenemer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. Senate Bill 85 is passed. And a carrier for this bill? Representative Bynum, thank you. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 85 and open a work session on Senate Bill 97A.
Mr. Chair, this is a measure that comes from the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It is a measure that establishes and modifies the supervision authority of the department over insurers. There is an A3 amendment that resolves conflicts with Senate Bill 754. And on that A3, there's no revenue impact and there's no expenditure impact. The vote on the measure in the Senate was 29-0.
Chaffee.
Thank you, Representative Barreto.
Chair Holvey, I move to adopt the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 97.
Representative Barreto moves to adopt the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 97. Discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, it's adopted.
Chair Holvey, I move Senate Bill 397 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves to Senate Bill 97,
thank you,
as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion making it clear that the motion was on Senate Bill 97? Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative
Fahey? Aye.
Representative
Hack? Aye.
Representative Hurst?
Aye.
Representative Kenemer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. Senate Bill 97 never received the votes. It's passed. And Representative Barreto, you want to carry that one?
Sure.
I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 97 and open a work session on Senate Bill 986.
Chair, committee members, this measure that was introduced by the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. You heard it May 10th. It eliminates the requirement that insurer provide the annual notice to the consumer regarding the policies and practices of disclosing personal information. No amendment and no expenditure impact or revenue impact, and the Senate vote on this measure was 29-0.
And no amendments to adopt on this one. So a motion on the bill.
Chair Holvey, I move Senate Bill 986 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barreto moves Senate Bill 986 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Kayla, can we have a roll call?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Penimer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barreto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bynum?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 986, haven't received the votes, has passed. Volunteer to carry this bill?
I'll do it.
Kinnamer, another one? Two in one day?
Two in one day. Well, Jan helps me, so what can I say?
All right. Well, thank you. Kinnamer, yes. Representative Kinnamer will carry the bill. Close the work session on Senate Bill 986. That concludes our work for the day. Thank you for that. I will adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor.
Yet.
I'll adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor.